Greetings, listeners, from Ebenezer and Triplis Lutheran Parish. This is Pastor John Nelson with my weekly recap of our Bible study and Pastor's text study for the narrative lectionary. This upcoming Sunday's text is the dividing of the kingdom, and it comes to us from 1 Kings chapter 12, verses 1 through 17, and verses 25 through 29. Before we get to the reading, we're going to cover some background material. So I mentioned last week that when the people of Israel initially requested a king from the Lord through the prophet Samuel, the Lord did not recommend that they do it. The Lord warned the people that a king would tax them and would oppress them, and they would ultimately regret having a king. But the people of Israel insisted that they wanted a king. All of their neighboring kingdoms had kings, and they were jealous. They wanted a king like their neighbors had, a leader. So the Lord acquiesces, although there is a warning the Lord gives to the people of Israel that when the time comes, when they are groaning and complaining about their king, the Lord will not hear them. So the Lord has warned them that they should not have a king. They insisted, and the Lord says, fine, you can have a king, but you're going to live to regret it, and when you regret it, I won't have any sympathy for you. And so after that, Saul is anointed king, and he's an okay king for a little while, but he starts to go away from the Lord and gets in some trouble. And so Samuel then anoints the youngest son of Jesse, a guy by the name of David. David is anointed, and there is a civil war that will split north and south. David comes from the tribe of Judah, which is the largest of the 12 tribes, and it's the southern, it's the major tribe in the south. And so there will be a civil war eventually that will conclude with the reading that we had last week of David being anointed king in Hebron over all of Israel. And he then moves the capital of Israel from Hebron to Jerusalem, which at that point was not a very big town. It was fairly small. But with David moving the Ark of the Covenant there and building a palace there, it quickly becomes a major hub in Israel. Jerusalem, of course, means City of Peace. David, you know, has some more wars he has to fight, and after he is moved into Jerusalem, we also have the narrative, the story of David and Bathsheba, and David commits adultery and arranges for Bathsheba's husband to be killed in battle, and for that, their first child will not survive. And the prophet Nathan has to confront David with all of that. As David gets older and gets on in years, he wants to build a temple to the Lord to house the Ark of the Covenant, which signifies the presence of God. But the Lord ultimately says, no, you have too much blood on your hands. So it will be your son, Solomon, who will build a temple to house the Ark of the Covenant. David gives the plans that he had for the temple to his son when he is close to death. He also donates quite a bit of his own personal wealth for the building of the temple, and he encourages the people of Israel to give gifts to the king, to King Solomon, for the building of the temple. And then David dies. Solomon succeeds him, although it is not an entirely smooth succession because Solomon is a younger son, and the eldest son is a guy by the name of Adonijah. And there is some conflict there, but ultimately Solomon cements his rule, and he begins working on building the temple, but he also builds himself a very nice palace as well to house his many, many wives and concubines. Solomon has a bunch of wives because that is one way to secure alliances and to expand the kingdom of Israel. And he also has a bunch of concubines, and all of this kind of shows how important he is. He lives a very lavish lifestyle, and that will get him in some trouble, because as he's building his new palace and the temple, he needs a lot of money in order to do all of this. And so he begins to tax the people of Israel quite heavily, and requiring not just their wealth and a part of everything they harvest, but he also requires their service, and he becomes rather oppressive in ruling over the people of Israel. And during this time, Solomon also will start making sacrifices to the gods of some of his foreign wives, which the Lord does not appreciate. And eventually, the Lord will send a prophet to Solomon saying that the kingdom will be taken from you, but not from you, from your son, but I will leave a portion of the kingdom, Judah, in the hands of the Davidic line, the dynasty of King David. So because Solomon is so oppressive, and because he is offering sacrifice to foreign gods, there is going to be consequence, and our reading for this upcoming Sunday shows the consequences of Solomon's oppression and Solomon's worshiping of false gods. It is important to note that every time Solomon talks to God about building a temple, and even when Solomon prays the prayer of dedication for the temple, once it's complete, the Lord responds, you know, by saying basically, yes, go ahead, build a temple, I will reside there as long as you walk in my ways, as long as you are righteous. So it's kind of a continuation of the sort of covenantal language that had previously been established between the Lord and Israel at Mount Sinai and over that 40-year period of the giving of the law. So Solomon, towards the end of his life, is still being quite oppressive to his people, and the people are not happy with him. And a leader arises from the north, a guy by the name of Jeroboam, and he starts to try to resist Solomon and try to be a voice for the people, especially of the north. Those old division lines, that old fracture under Saul and David between the north and the south, those lines still exist, and Jeroboam is garnering support in the north. Solomon finds out about this and begins to threaten Jeroboam's life, and Jeroboam has to flee to Egypt. So that's kind of where things are when King Solomon eventually will die in chapter 11 of 1 Kings. But not after the Lord warning Solomon that there were repercussions and consequences to his actions, and the first rebellion by Jeroboam is also going to occur in chapter 11, and then Solomon dies. And that brings us then to our reading for this coming Sunday, 1 Kings chapter 12, 1-17 and 25-29. We read, Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. When Jeroboam, son of Nebat, heard of it, for he was still in Egypt, where he had fled from King Solomon, then Jeroboam returned from Egypt, and they sent and called him. And Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and said to Rehoboam, Your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke that he placed on us, and we will serve you. He said to them, Go away for 3 days, then come again to me. So the people went away. Then King Rehoboam took counsel with the older men who had attended his father Solomon while he was still alive, saying, How do you advise me to answer this people? They answered him, If you will be a servant to this people today, and serve them, and speak good words to them when you answer them, then they will be your servants forever. But he disregarded the advice that the older men gave him, and consulted with the young men who had grown up with him and now attended him. He said to them, What do you advise that we answer this people who have said to me, Lighten the yoke that your father put on us? The young men who had grown up with him said to him, Thus you should say to this people who spoke to you, Your father made our yoke heavy, but you must lighten it for us. Thus you should say to them, My little finger is thicker than my father's loins. Now whereas my father laid on you a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king had said, Come to me again the third day. The king answered the people harshly. He disregarded the advice that the older men had given him, and spoke to them according to the advice of the young men. My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. So the king did not listen to the people, because it was a turn of affairs brought about by the Lord, that he might fulfill his word, which the Lord had spoken by Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam son of Nebat. When all Israel saw that the king would not listen to them, the people answered the king, What share do we have in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel, look now to your own house, O David. So Israel went away to their tents. But Rehoboam reigned over the Israelites who were living in the towns of Judah. And then we skip over some verses and resume verse 25. Then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim and resided there. He went out from there and built Penuel. Then Jeroboam said to himself, Now the kingdom may well revert to the house of David. If this people continues to go up to offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, the heart of this people will turn again to their master, King Rehoboam of Judah. They will kill me and return to King Rehoboam of Judah. So the king took counsel and made two calves of gold. He said to the people, You have gone up to Jerusalem long enough. Here are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. He set one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. So we see the fruition of the prophecy that was given to Solomon and also to Jeroboam that the kingdom would not remain fully in the line of David. It's interesting to note early on in the reading that there are a number of references to Egypt and to Pharaoh. So in verse 2, it specifically says that Jeroboam was still in Egypt, for he had fled from King Solomon. Then Jeroboam returned from Egypt. So we have two allusions to Egypt right in the first portion of the reading. And then when Israel, along with Jeroboam, comes to Rehoboam, they reference the heavy yoke and the hard service of Rehoboam's father, which would be King Solomon. Now, those words in Hebrew, hard service and heavy yoke, are the same words that were used way back in Exodus to describe what the Pharaoh was doing to the people of Israel when they were slaves in Egypt. The Pharaoh placed a heavy yoke upon them and required bitter or hard service of them. So the language being used by Jeroboam and the people of Israel in their complaint to Rehoboam is language that would have hearkened back to Pharaoh's oppression of the people of Israel in Egypt. The people of Israel under King Solomon felt that his requirements and taxes was as oppressive as when they were slaves in Egypt. That's likely a bit of hyperbole. We do know that Solomon used slaves and used indentured servants, but the text does go out of its way to say that Solomon did not enslave his own people. However, he did require quite a bit in terms of taxes and in service of the people of Israel. So it certainly felt to the people of Israel a lot like what they endured under King Pharaoh. or under the Pharaoh. So the people of Israel have a legitimate complaint, and this complaint, you know, also would remind, hopefully, Rehoboam that the place of the king is to be a servant and to be an executor of justice on behalf of the widow and the orphan and the resident alien. And Solomon wasn't always great at that, especially in terms of treating his own people justly. And so the people of Israel are calling Rehoboam to ease the oppression that Solomon put them under, and to return to kind of the shepherd king that David was supposed to be, and return to the servant king model that the Lord kind of laid out for David. But Rehoboam takes the advice of the young men. We have dueling advice here, old men and young men. It's not necessarily chronological, like age. It's simply foolish versus the wise. And Rehoboam takes the advice of the foolish, immature men, people that he was close to, people that grew up with him. We might consider them to be yes men. And that's who Rehoboam has surrounded himself with. He takes their advice and tells the people that he is going to increase the burden and the yoke, and won't just beat them with whips, but with scorpions or scourges. And he ignores the advice of the wise. And it's interesting to note that the advice of the wise men, the older men, isn't necessarily that Rehoboam can't do what he wants to do, you know, increase this burden and even be even more oppressive than King Solomon. Their advice is simply to say it nicely, right? To speak kind words, to speak words of being a servant. And if you sound like you're going to serve the people, then the people will serve you. They actually don't really say that he can't be more oppressive. They just say, be wise in how you talk to the people. Rehoboam does not listen. He doesn't go quite as far as what the immature and young men suggest, you know, kind of comparing his little finger to his father King Solomon's loins. He doesn't seem to include that, but he definitely speaks harsh words to Jeroboam and to the people of Israel, primarily the people of the north. Rehoboam needs to learn the importance of language, and he does not learn that very well. Check my notes here. So after Rehoboam says this to the people of Israel and to Jeroboam, they basically say, nuts to you. We are going to go back to our tents, go back our own way, and the kingdom will be split. And they're going to anoint Jeroboam to be their king. Those are the verses that we skip over. While still in Shechem, Rehoboam sends his taskmaster over forced labor to the people, and his taskmaster, Adoram is his name, ends up being stoned, and King Rehoboam flees Shechem and returns to Jerusalem. And after that, Jeroboam gets anointed king over Israel, the tribes of the north, also sometimes referred to as Ephraim. And the house of David, Rehoboam, is the king of the south and primarily of the tribe of Judah. When Rehoboam returns to Jerusalem, he assembles an army, a rather large army, 180,000 chosen troops, and he wants to go with his army north to destroy Jeroboam. But the word of God comes to Rehoboam and says, you shall not go up or fight against your kindred, the people of Israel. Let everyone go home, for this thing is from me, this thing being the dividing of the kingdom. So Rehoboam is not able to do what he wants to do and try to go and conquer the north and destroy Jeroboam. Jeroboam moves his capital from Shechem to Penuel, which is a strategic choice because Penuel, well, it's got some symbolism. It's where Jacob wrestled with the Lord at the river Jabbok, and it is also east of the Jordan. So there's kind of a natural barrier between his new capital and Rehoboam and Judah. So it's a little bit more defensible over in Penuel. And then he builds these idols, these golden calves, because he doesn't want his people going to Jerusalem to offer sacrifice at the temple, even though that's where they're supposed to do it. He's worried that if they continue to do that, they will eventually just decide, well, Rehoboam should be our king as well, because Jerusalem is the holy city, and he is king over Jerusalem. And so Jeroboam builds these golden calves and places them at Bethel and Dan. And Jeroboam gets kind of a bad rap for doing this, but in all honesty, this is a cultic tradition that has been around in Israel for some time. I mean, even going back before Aaron builds the golden calf at the base of Mount Sinai, this golden calf and the worshiping of a golden calf is just it's a common thing. It's been going on in Israel and in the people of Israel for hundreds of years at this point. So Jeroboam is not really doing anything new. It's still wrong, but it's not new for him to do this. And if we move forward a little bit, two chapters further into 1 Kings, in chapter 14, we discover that Judah and the kingdom of Judah in the south is also worshiping and offering sacrifices to other gods, and they are offering sacrifices not in Jerusalem, but rather in the high places around the south, in the high places around Jerusalem. So they're not. It's not just Jeroboam that isn't really doing right. Eventually, Rehoboam and Judah are also going to be giving in to this frequent temptation of the people of Israel to worship the gods of the people who were in the promised land before them, and to worship the gods of their neighbors. So chapter 14, verse 22, Judah did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. They provoked the Lord to jealousy with their sins that they committed more than all that their ancestors had done. For they also built for themselves high places, pillars, and sacred poles on every high hill and under every green tree. There were also male temple prostitutes in the land. They committed all the abominations of the nations that the Lord drove out before the people of Israel. So neither kingdom is really great. Neither kingdom, north and south, Rehoboam, Jeroboam, neither one is very faithful to God. They both quickly go and worship gods that they should not. Rehoboam is not going to... No, that's not right. Yes, Rehoboam, that is right. Rehoboam is not going to last super long, and his son Abijah is going to take over when Rehoboam dies, and Abijah is going to fight with Jeroboam in the north and is going to conquer Bethel and a number of other cities just over the border between north and south. So, and this is going to be just a frequent occurrence then in the generations that follow. There's going to be a lot of fighting between the north and the south, and there becomes a bit of a no man's land that Bethel is in between the north and the south. Those villages and those territories are going to be traded back and forth between the north and the south. Eventually, the North is going to be conquered, and the writers of that history are going to make it very clear that it's Jeroboam's fault because of these golden calves and worshiping not in Jerusalem but in Bethel and Dan. As I pointed out, that's going to be occurring in Judah as well. So it's not just that. There are other things going on, but eventually the kingdom of the north, the kingdom of Israel, founded here by Jeroboam, is going to be conquered. 50 or so years later, the southern kingdom of Judah will also be conquered by the Babylonians, and so both the north and the south will end up being reunited, but reunited under the empire of the Babylonians and the Assyrians and the Persians, and so the conflict between north and south will end to some extent at that point, but those dividing lines are present for a long time in the life of Israel, those dividing lines that were established even during the time of the judges between north and south. Judah being the largest tribe, they like to throw their weight around, and the northern tribes don't appreciate that. And so these fracture lines are evident throughout the life and history of the kingdom of Israel, the time of the kings, which doesn't last very long. We've got Saul, and then David, and then Solomon. Those three get to rule over a united kingdom. And then here, because of the oppression of Solomon, and because of his worship of foreign gods and marrying foreign wives, because of that, the Lord says, your son will not inherit the full kingdom, and the kingdom is divided from that point going forward. A lot of interesting preaching points, I think, here. You can certainly see how, you know, power corrupts, and that's been an issue in the midst of humanity throughout human history. You certainly have examples of that today, of people in power doing what they can to save their own power and to increase their own power rather than serving the people the way they are supposed to. Our assigned text from the Gospel of Mark this Sunday also gets at that. It's from Mark chapter 10. So Jesus called them and said to them, you know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. So that, you know, that servant king model was something that was established even in the Old Testament. But, you know, human beings being broken and generally selfish and power hungry, we don't have very many examples of that sort of king in the Old Testament. Jesus comes to be a new king, a new high priest, and Jesus comes to serve and not to be served, and we will talk more about that when we get to the Gospel of Mark, Advent 4 through Easter. So that's certainly another preaching point. I think another preaching point that I've explored is, who do you listen to, right? Rehoboam has some choices to make, right? And he makes a poor choice in who he turns to for advice and who he listens to. And it's a good question for us to wrestle with today. Who do we turn to for advice? Who do we go to when we have to make a tough decision, or when we're confronted with choices about how we move forward? Rehoboam makes a fairly poor choice, and that comes back to get him eventually. So those are kind of two preaching points that I'm playing around with, and I'm sure there are other preaching points as well. But that's what I have for our study and from our conversations at our Bible study and pastor's text study. So I hope that may have helped you or prepared you for this upcoming Sunday. Have a great rest of your week.